The following podcast contains strong language and adult themes and is intended for mature audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Hanky Digital presents The Skin. Show me what lies beneath. An audiobook podcast by Christian Heinke. Prologue. As the pain returned, Catherine couldn't help but smile. "I wondered where you had been for so long," she greeted him. He grabbed her again, his power taking her breath away. A gray nothingness spread before her eyes. "No, Catherine," the professor's soft baritone warned. "Don't pass out. Just hold on to the pain a little longer." "No problem," she whispered, barely audible. She was being cynical. The pain swirled inside her, but the professor didn't seem to notice. "That's my girl," he said. It sounded paternal, but it echoed emptily in her skull. This man didn't give a damn about her. She knew that. Indifference was something she was well acquainted with. She wanted to hit him. But right now, she couldn't even move her little toe. The pain paralyzed her, throbbing in her head, gnawing at her lungs, burning her skin, and she let it consume her. Catherine Williams knew the pain well. From the time she turned 14, it became her confidant, companion, and invisible friend. The entirety of her glamorous, horrible professional modeling existence. The pain followed her everywhere. None of the airport pat-downs revealed it. No customs official in the world declared it. He flew with her across oceans, dashed from one show to the next, had his makeup and hair done with her, strutted down the runway with her, threw on another lavishly expensive rag, and wobbled down the runway again. With her, who was called the goddess, and yet was nothing more than a delicious piece of meat on a stick. Middle-aged women gasped, fingered their wrinkled necks, and immediately prescribed diets or surgery for their fading bodies. Fat, tanned men licked their lips, tugged at the pants of their suits to hide their erections, and attentively fucked her when she paused briefly at the end of the runway. Flashbulbs pierced her. Thousands of eyes scrutinized every inch of her skin, and the pain was always there. He eagerly shared a line that glowed bluish in the black light. In those moments, when she was completely out of herself, when her immaculate cocoon did things that her mind, her spirit, would never have allowed, when her arms wrapped around the body of her Adonis of the week, her fingers clawing into his dark hair, and the triumphant expression on his smooth, sweaty face, as he, of all people, was granted the privilege of sexual intercourse with one of the most beautiful women on the planet. In those moments, the pain briefly took a step back into the darkness, from whence it had come. She became very calm and peaceful inside. For a few moments, she felt liberated. The moment of silence and freedom ended, and she heard her heavy breathing and stilettos against the tiled walls. The distant bass thump, the chatter of two women at the large mirror, and the moaning of two gay men in the next stall. "That's enough," she usually said. Adonis kissed her with gratitude on the neck. He slipped off the condom, and they shared the toilet paper to clean themselves up, attuned like a familiar married couple. Then they straightened their clothes, snorted a quick line, walked out of the stall, and threw themselves back into the noisy swirl of bodies of beauty and emptiness. "Ah, no, no, what did you promise me, Kathy?" the professor reminded her. Catherine thought about it. What had she promised that idiot? She was so tired. She couldn't remember. Then it came back to her. Stay awake? She asked. That's right, Catherine. Stay awake. Pain. Thirst, she gasped. Her eyes filled with tears. It's all right. It'll be over soon. The nurse will get you a glass of water. But I don't want to give you anything for the pain just yet. The collapse of the PCL isn't quite complete. The same medicine that would take away your pain could prevent the nerves from connecting to your epidermis. And we don't want that, do we? No, of course not, you moron. She did not know what he was talking about. She nodded quietly. What had happened that she was lying here helpless, wrapped in unbearable pain, talking to this professor asshole? Was she in a hospital? And why couldn't she see? She abruptly remembered something. An image in her blurred memory came into focus. A happy, familiar face. She had to ask. His name was Danny. Where's Danny? Is he okay? Danny. The professor repeated her question, then paused. Not for long. But even that brief silence made her more desperate than all the previous pain and thirst. Danny's fine, the professor said. Don't worry about him. Something was wrong. She didn't feel Danny's presence. It felt like the connection between her and her child had been abruptly cut. Oh my God, Danny. Don't lie to me. Where is my son? Where is Danny? He's fine, Catherine, really, the professor tried to reassure her. Another face appeared in her mind's eye. I know you, the face had told her a million years ago. Then it extended its hand to her. Dito, she had replied and taken his hand in hers. Then it had happened. She had felt it. Shelter, protection, perhaps love. The end of pain. Richard. Where's Richard? Is Rich here? Again, that little eerie pause. The nice professor fell silent again. He's here, safe and sound. He wanted to see you right away, but we can't allow that yet, he finally said, emphasizing the need to maintain the sterility of this room. We'll see him. Later, I promise you, Catherine. Swear. Catherine, please. All that matters now is that... Swear. Her voice was shrill, and with each word came a strange gurgling sound. She was getting scared. What was wrong with her? The professor sighed. I swear on my wife's life you will see Richard and Danny again. Everything will be all right, Catherine. Fine, she croaked. Everything's going to be fine. Rich had always said that. There had been a time when she truly believed him, just pregnant with Danny. She had been so afraid that her past pain would poison the new life growing inside her, turning it into a nightmarish monster. It's going to be okay, Catherine, Rich had said. He had held her until her tears had dried and the panic had subsided. Yes, she had trusted Richard, but she didn't trust this professor, because the pain was back. And how? It ran through her body like glowing wires. Don't, Catherine. The professor's voice urged her. Don't faint. Catherine, please, don't faint now. Stay right here. Stay with me, Catherine. Chapter 1. Back. The first cut is the deepest. Rod Stewart, 1974. Andy almost made it to the office that morning. He got up early as usual, showered, shaved, and dressed. As he prepared breakfast, he convinced himself that he was going to make it today. He had made actual progress. Today was finally the day. After rinsing his cup and plate in the sink, he tucked the briefcase he had been packing for weeks under his arm and walked to the garage. But instead of getting into his Saab to drive to his office in Easton, his eyes fell on the small sailboat in the back of the garage. The Shark 24 boldly carried the name Vanity. Andy's wife had chosen the name, although it didn't suit her at all. Fran was anything but vain, but she had insisted on it. The boat's mast had broken, and sand and seaweed still clung to the hull. They found it on one sandbar of Calvert Cliffs, with no sign of Fran. He stood there for a long time, staring at the dead boat. In the end, he turned around and chose to walk instead. And just like all the days before, when he'd only made it as far as the garage, today his walk ended in St. Michael's. What's 7 miles between friends? Seated on the pavilion steps, he observed the jetty's hustle and bustle in a trance. The tide was coming in, and the stupid, stubborn child in him still hoped it would bring Fran back. And when he had stared long enough at the bay and the emptiness inside him, and the psychiatrist inside him had said long enough in a soft voice that Fran would never come back, Andy closed his eyes and put that one special record back in his memory. "No, please don't," pleaded the cowardly, sniveling wimp inside him. That would make him good money if it were one of his patients. Fran and he were still at Yale. In the small room she shared with Sandy Bergman, Fran had thrown a cloth over the bedside lamp and said she couldn't be unfaithful to her crush. She pointed to the Sting poster above her bed. He had then quickly put a pair of paper earphones on good old Sting and made Fran laugh. He loved her laughter. Then he put on a Bruce Springsteen record, and they danced silently to the music in the dim light. Later, they made love for the first time. Yet, before anything else, blindfold the beautiful Sting. "I can't do it with your crush watching," he had said, and again she had laughed out loud and kissed him. Andy began to whimper softly. Tears ran down his cheeks. "Great, so much for progress, Dr. Peterson," he thought. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Jamie pull up to the edge of the park in her little Honda. She got out and scanned the area for him, cupping her hand over her eyes like a caricature of an Iroquoian in an old Western. "Doc," she called. She hadn't seen him yet. If he ducked, she might not even see him. She was short, plump, and sweet. More shortbread than efficient secretary.
"Not so mean, honey," Fran remarked.
"You always liked it when I was mean."
"Yes, Andy, but not anymore. I'm dead."
"Good point." But why was he surprised? Fran always had good arguments. She was a hell of a lawyer. He swallowed. "It had been, darling. My wonderful nature and my manpower have long since been taken over by someone else in Kevin's firm." "Yes, yes, it's all right. I know you're dead." He raised his hand with a sigh to get Jamie's attention.
"I'm here."
She stumbled over to him immediately. She had bought coffee and handed him a cup of white chocolate mocha. Andy suddenly regretted being so mean to her. She was a bad secretary, but a good person. "Weren't you going to come into the office today, Doc? I mean, really?"
"Yep."
"Doc?"
"Yep."
"You're just sitting here in the park in St. Michael's again." Instead of another "yep," he just stared at his wonderful, lovely, annoying secretary. "I know." She took the empty cup from him and tossed it into a trash can. Then she held out her hand. "Come on, come on."
"Where to?"
"Well, where do you think?"
"To the office. You have a patient."
He looked at her stupidly.
"I have what?"
"A patient. In case you don't remember, that's what they call people who come to your office to have you fix the cups in their cabinets." When he didn't respond to the old joke, Jamie lowered his eyes and pushed his lower lip forward in insult.
"Come on, Doc, give yourself a break."
She tugged at his arm. He resisted.
"What kind of patient?" he asked.
"Actually, a female patient. She's been waiting for 47 minutes, and she's almost finished reading all the magazines in the waiting room, even the old ones." Andy tried hard to understand Jamie. "A patient? But I haven't practiced since..." He didn't say it.
"Say it."
"No, Fran."
"Then at least think it."
"No.
Say it."
"All right. I haven't practiced since Fran died."
"Since you died. Good boy."
Then Andy thought he'd guessed it. He looked sternly at his secretary. "Jamie." But she raised her hands in defense.
"No, Doc. Really. I didn't make an appointment with her. She just walked into the office this morning."
"And why didn't you tell her that my office is closed indefinitely? Why didn't you send her to Samuel's, like my other patients?"
"That's what I told her, but she said you'd probably make an exception for her."
"Jamie?"
"No, really. This isn't the usual scam. Okay, I kind of felt bad for her. Besides, I thought you might actually make an exception this time.
And why?
Maybe because you're better than Samuels? He shook his head. Definitely not. The opposite was true. He wasn't better than Samuels. Currently, he desperately needed therapy.
Oh, please, boss, please,
Jamie pleaded. Slowly, Andy realized. Is the lady a celebrity? He asked. It was not uncommon in Talbot County. Jamie, why the fuss over another celebrity? Is the lady perhaps so prominent that you would move up in the pecking order of the members of your book club if you were able to boast of your acquaintance with her? Jamie nodded so vigorously he feared her head would come off.
Debbie Schultz will die of envy.
He knew Debbie Schultz. An unnatural death from an acute attack of envy was well within the realm of possibility for her. Slowly, he became curious. Are you going to inform me about this person? Jamie grinned. I'm sure you'll like her, Doc. Really? A dream of a woman. But of course she's completely meshugga. I can see that right away. Understandable, considering what she's been through. Andy sighed. Okay, Jamie, so who is it? She was sitting on the narrow couch outside his office, listlessly flipping through an old Reader's Digest as if she'd picked it up for the third time. She turned her head as he walked through the door and smiled at him. It was a noncommittal smile, but it caught Andy with a ferocity that confused him. It was wrong to respond to her in that manner. Only his wife's smile could make him feel that way. Yet he understood that Catherine Williams was not an ordinary woman. He knew her too well, and she knew him. She stood up. He raised his arms a little helplessly to greet her. Before he knew it, Catherine had wrapped her arms around him and pressed herself wordlessly against him. She still has the same scent as before, he thought irritably, and felt his knees go weak. And for a moment, he was no longer the widowed psychiatrist Andy Peterson, but the gangly Andy with his high school sweetheart Kathy cuddling up to him. But he didn't want that. There was no turning back the clock. He gently pulled away from her grip. Her eyes were wet, and she was sobbing. I'm sorry. It's all right, Kath. He swallowed. Say something nice. Fran. Say something nice. You look nice. Thanks. Only now did they notice Jamie standing there with her mouth open. Andy pointed to the door of his office. Go on in. There's a box of Kleenex on the coffee table. She nodded without a sound. Andy turned to Jamie, who remained frozen like a pillar of salt, staring at him with wide eyes. You know Catherine Williams, Doc? Andy couldn't help but smile. No calls for the next hour, please. She had taken off her shoes and was sitting cross-legged on the couch. The sunlight caught in her hair and turned it to honey. I forgot how beautiful she is, he thought. Of course, he had seen Catherine's face many times over the years. It was inevitable. It appeared larger than life on billboards, framed and lit in display cases in sterile, carpeted airport corridors, and as a spread in glossy magazines. This was not the real Catherine he knew, merely a face from his past. With time, these copies ceased to sting him. He glanced at them, or just turned the pages. It was the real Catherine Williams, here in his little waiting room, who took his breath away again. She had noticed his gaze and had wrapped her arms around herself protectively. Sorry, he said awkwardly. He became little Andy again. You just look fantastic. She smiled painfully. Too bad I don't feel that way. Is it true what the papers said? What do you mean? Well, about the burns. She nodded. Yes, over 60% of my skin was damaged. But how? She shrugged. Dr. Winters tried to explain it to me. This tissue engineering stuff is overwhelming. Maybe I should have finished high school like you told me to. He didn't know what to say. Those words could have initiated a session with any other patient, but not with her. How long will you be in Easton? He asked as gently as he could. About 2 weeks. So she'd had trouble coming to you. And how do you like it here?
It's very nice. It's my first time here.
Tell me, where do you live?
There's a place that Richard acquired here a while ago. When I found out you lived here, I kept putting off moving. She stopped herself before adding, I'm sure Danny would have loved the water. I'm sure he would.
And how are you?
She regained her composure.
I'm fine.
He tried to compose himself as well.
What brings you to me, Kath? Is it because of the accident? Or because of
Danny and Richard?
No.
That's why I was in therapy. I mean, I still am, in New York.
She bit her lips.
I'm only here because of your email. It helped me a lot.
Her eyes became moist again.
She fell silent and sat with her head down.
I'm very sorry about your wife, she finally said.
You must have had a difficult time as well.
Your encouragement meant even more to me.
That was only natural.
Not necessarily.
Her hand traced the folds of the couch.
I haven't been very nice to you.
Noticing the blush rising to his face, he looked out the window.
That was 15 years ago. We were children, Kath, forgiven and forgotten.
Just like that? She asked.
He thought about it, wanted to answer professionally and carefully, but Catherine was the only person in his life besides Fran who could draw him out.
Life keeps moving, Kath, but not in exactly the same manner.
She locked eyes with him and clasped his hand.
Does it? She asked.
Without realizing it, he gently touched the back of her hand.
Only after a while did he realize that it was a gesture from their time together, and he stopped immediately.
How hard it must be for you. I may have lost my wife, but you...
He couldn't say it.
She nodded.
I miss him, Andy. With every heartbeat, I miss him.
He said nothing. There was nothing to say.
He just held her hand.
One step.
Please, Mia pleaded. You don't have to do this.
She took another step, backwards, onto the balcony.
Please, don't.
Fear had ruined her complexion. The blood didn't help.
One more step.
Why are you doing this?
No answer.
She pushed her back against the railing. Her hands groped for a way out. There was none.
Please, I do love you.
Don't do this, Vic.
And another step.
What do you want from me?
She screamed, grabbing the straps of her negligee.
I do love you. Please, you don't have to do this. Here, I'm yours.
The silky fabric slid to the floor. Her black hair fluttered in the wind. She got goosebumps.
Please, do what you want. Really no problem, Vic. But please put the fucking knife down.
But he was already with her. Shining steel in the moonlight. The lights of the vehicles on the FDR, far below her, like rivers of blood.
Thank you for listening. dhout.podig.io